Good afternoon, everybody. I think last year, also here, isn't it? I remember you and some of you. Same person. And I would like to know among the sort of audience, those who first time came here, raise hand. Okay. Right. So then those are the people who participated previously, I think one time or two times. Do you find some change on my face? Not much change. Actually, last year, I think February, this right eye, what called?
Cataract.
Removed. And then July, this also. Now my eye quite clear. So some of those bald head, you see, few hairs I can see. So 1 year passed. Time always go, always move. No force can stop that. It is quite natural. So we have to go according that time movement. Along that time movement. But one thing I always tell people, we have the one, or the what we can do is use time properly, meaningful, sensible, or just wasting time, or sometimes time used for destructive work. That up to us. So now, the very purpose of our gathering here is how to utilize time properly. And I think almost minute by minute, hour to hour, and day by day, week by week, month by month, and year by year, decade by decade. Through that way, our rest of our whole life becomes something meaningful. So whether I accept life after this, after death, whether I accept or not, whether I believe or not, it is important to spend this very life should be something meaningful. So meaningful means what's the day? Time which you really feel, you get genuine satisfaction. Use time harming, cheating, bully. You may get some kind of satisfaction at the immediate level. But long run, you yourself also feel some doubt. Even non-believer, too much cheating other people, too much telling lies, too much bully other, exploit other. Although it's no concern about God or these things. But still, as a human being, little sort of
uneasiness.
So therefore, those things which get genuine, deep satisfaction. And you use your time, activities which gives you real satisfaction. That's the meaningful life. So money will not give you real satisfaction. Think only money. I think greed increase. As a result, you never get satisfaction. Always want more, more, more. More compassionate sort of attitude, act, or compassionate sort of thought really gives you genuine, long-lasting satisfaction. So, firstly, before telling you, as a Buddhist monk, I have to check my own sort of motivation or how to use my own time. So now my age, nearly 78. Oh, recently, Mahakumbha Mela, I received an invitation, as before, as usual. So in the past, I think three times Kumbha Mela, I participated. So this fourth. So I decide I must go. I am Dharamsala, so we arrange a chartered plane from Dharamsala to Allahabad. But then that very day, weather bad. So, generally speaking, beyond my control, but God control. So God not willing me to participate to Kumbh Mela. Then again postponed. I think 10 days, fixed one day. Again that day, weather. Between there, there's good weather, but that very day, again bad weather. So then I felt, now, if I cannot go this time, then next 12 years, after 12 years, means my age 90 years. So maybe difficult. So I feel a little sad. I really very, very keen. In the past, every sort of Mahakumbha Mela I visited. Like that. But doesn't matter. Like that. So important day-to-day life must be meaningful life. So now our topic, the main purpose is, say, how to carry our life some meaningful. That I usually see they telling people at the beginning as an introduction of Buddha Dharma. And then they how to practice Buddha Dharma. So two faces, yes. So, now introduction. I think our old sort of the audience already know. But I usually used to tell people, first we should think on a human level. We are a human being. Of course, all we usually call sentient being who have the experience of the pleasure and pains. We do not consider, although there is some sort of debate, that these plants also have some feeling or cognitive power. Some school of thought, now according to ancient Indians of thought, including Buddhism, you see, there's life. So certain sort of their movement or reaction is only chemical, due to
chemical reactions.
No feeling, no mind. Except you see these sort of their lives. Otherwise, you see all the lives which have the feeling of pains and happiness and some kind of cognitive power. So we, one of them. And within that, again, this is sophisticated sort of brain, which we have. And others, like animals or insects, have the same sort of experience of feeling of pains and pleasure and some cognitive sort of experience or ability, but not much sort of thinking power, right? Intelligence. We have this marvelous intelligence. All sentient beings want happy life, do not want suffering. Then we, because our unique, powerful intelligence, so we have much bigger sort of ability to achieve happiness and reduce or avoid suffering. But meantime, sometimes this marvelous intelligence also sometimes is a source of problem. I think even if it's a physical sort of also the illness, also is sometimes too much stress here, too much worry. That's mental level. Also is a ruin of physical sort of health. Perhaps more educated people, more sophisticated mind, sometimes more worry. Because, you see, more sort of expectation, more kasota,
hopes and fears.
Hopes and fears. Fear. Because of this intelligence. Like the ordinary animal, I think much less. Except immediate sort of threat. Otherwise, they have not much sort of the thinking power or past memory. We have, because of the intelligence, our memory also is very, very strong. And since we have this sort of writing or language, we have the ability not only have memory within our own lifetime, but also generations. In the past generations or centuries. So that also sometimes you see add worry, anger, hatred, hope, like that. So now, it is quite logical. Use our intelligence. Meantime, intelligence should be source of happiness, successful. Not worry, not sort of anxiety or stress. Now that is, I think from birth, we already equipped a sense of human affection. Affection really source of felicity, source of happiness, source of security, right?
Sense of security.
Source of self-confidence. I think we, even other animals also, who born from mother affection, very strong, even animal. So that provides the youngster sense of security and security, right?
Now,
and very sort of comfortable sort of mental state. That immense sort of help for sustain or for proper growth of their physical cells. These are nothing to do with religion, biological factor, no question. Now there are some scientists who carry some sort of investigation, these things, they found a constant fear, constant hatred, anger, very bad for our health. So calm mind is very, very important for our health. How develop calm mind? With darkness? No. We utilize fully about our intelligence, sharp intelligence. And that intelligence is, should be source of calm mind. That can be done. In order to do that, firstly, we should develop awareness, the usefulness about our warm-heartedness. Analyze according to your own experience, and also analyze the, your friends. No, analyze the how sort of happy or how sort of unhappy among your friends. The real sort of happiness, real sort of friendship comes from warm-heartedness, not from money, not from power, not from mere here education, nor knowledge. That's quite clear. So then, once we develop clear awareness, clear sort of understanding, the warm-heartedness is really ultimate source of happiness, ultimate source of physical health, then you pay more attention. So I usually used to tell him, I said, hey, 3 points. Our common experience, that means we everybody born from mother. So those people who immediate after birth, were born, and then next few years, those children who really received maximum affection from their mother, and including, I think, mother's milk and physical touch, those human beings, in deep insight, much happier. And those children, maybe the other day, on our meeting, speaker, Dr. Karan Singh, and myself, then one Muslim, great sort of Muslim sort of today,
scholar, practitioner.
Oh, wonderful. I met this before also. I think the
Maulana Mahibahim.
The buyer? Who's that name?
Maulana Wahidi Khan.
Oh, that's wonderful, sort of Muslim. I met before also. Wonderful. Yeah. Then the Bishop Tutu's daughter. So, while we answer or explain something, different questions put all the sort of speaker way for people. And then during that sort of session, of course, Dr. Karen Singh, since I think 56, we know each other very close. So I teach him as far as the receiving mothers or also the affection is concerned and close touch with mother is concerned, I'm more fortunate. I'm just villagers as a child. Then I told Dr. Karen Singh, as a son of Maharaja, so Maharani, perhaps I think, let their sort of facility, Yomokare.
Ayas.
Ayas, take care. And I think the Rani may not give the milk. But for my case, you see, no formality, no sort of that kind of sort of facility. Kasata.
Formalities.
So I tease him. I received more affection from my mother because of poor farmer's son. So that's our common sort of experience. Then that time, I didn't mention, usually I telling you see people, say, my mother is so kind to me. And because of such sort of kindness, so I become quite bold. So my mother, quite often, you see, carrying me on her shoulder. Then I hold my mother's two ear. When I want to go this side, I do this. And this side, go like that. So actually, I control my mother's movement. I think Dr. Karen Singh, I think, never have that kind of experience, I think. So anyway, of course, these are not sort of expression of disrespect. Of course, I have deep respect, Dr. Karen Singh. At the sort of meeting, as I mentioned earlier, so I mentioned, you see, like that. So this part I didn't mention. So that's our common experience. Then common sense among my friend. Those people may not be rich or significant person, but very friendly, trusted family members. And also, you see, they treated other people as a close friend and humble, sincere, honest. These people, you see, Kazoda, never appear as a stranger, as a human being. Those may be some position or rich. Last year, I met some group of Chinese from mainland China. Some of them, I think four or five, educated, and some sort of, I think, writers like that. One very, very poor farmer, quite old, his sort of shoes, his clothes, very poor. So we sit together, and of course, I have some sort of discussions or some talk with those intellectuals or writers. Then also I ask something about the poor peasantry.
No.
Then all those come from mainland China, same. All Han Chinese. But those educated, more sort of successful life, rare. No. They look down that old person. So deep inside, I got a little irritation. So I pay more attention towards that poor person. And ask her own sort of life, and the condition about their village farmers. Really, the story, really, very sad. He told me, he said, those poor people in countryside, nobody taking care about them. Officials don't care. So these people, when you think got some problem, nowhere to appeal, nowhere to seek help. Only power and money. So such society, such I think a community, where no sense of concern of others' well-being, sense of truthful, honest, then no real peace. Among Tibetans also, when I was young, when I asked my sweepers, come from a village, uneducated, most of them illiterate. But when I ask some questions, they answer very frankly. All sort of complaints about the regent or some lamas or some officials, they have no hesitation. They carry all bad news. When I ask some officials same question, then they say, sometimes silence, sometimes say, oh, okay, good, like that. So, more sort of ordinary people seems more honest, more truthful. That brings me trust. That brings me real friendship. Maybe with a successful life, but a little bit sort of distance and difficult. So that actually against basic human nature. So honest, truthful brings trust. Trust brings friendship. That friendship is really sound right now. So when we use our common sense and judge, then you get conviction or honest, truthful, compassionate attitude. And then how to bring honest and truthful? If you, your mind, clean, genuinely is concerned others' well-being, not thinking your own sort of selfish sort of interest, then you can act truthful, or openly, transparent. Through my self-centered attitude, and ready to exploit other, and even you want to be honest or truthful, you can't, because deep inside the self-centered attitude there. So analyze these things. Then you get conviction or sense of compassion or sense of sort of, what's the sense of concern of others' well-being. That really immense help to bring inner strength, self-confidence. Through that way, you can conduct attitude transparently. That brings trust. That brings friendship. That creates happy human society. No matter whether believer or non-believer. Isn't it? The scientific sort of finding. Since last, almost now, over 30 years, I have serious discussion with scientists. Different field. So particularly in medical science, right now. Through their own experiment, now they clearly sort of say, confirm, warmheartedness is the source of healthy body, source of calm mind. So therefore, first level, on human level, everybody wants a happy life. So we must realize the ultimate source of happy life, successful life, is within ourselves. not material, not power, not fame, real here. So nobody control that. It's entirely up to you. So that's important to know the ultimate source of your own happy life is within yourself. So pay more attention about that. That's number one. So that usually I tell, I believe, the India, this country, last over 3,000 years, the secular concept, secular ethics, already there. Without any religious belief, even remain non-believer of God or these things, but accept these secular ethics. I think that's great sort of say, treasure of India, I think. Because of that, ahimsa also related. Respect, different belief, and including non-believer. So respect there, so harmony comes. Not harming other. So ahimsa and religious harmony, these things see happen. So the concept of ahimsa very much related with this. Respect others' life, others' right. Then no basis to harm, to try to control. So real ahimsa, basis of real ahimsa related with that kind of mental attitude. The religious harmony also is very much related with that. Respect others' view, others' right. Then respect their religion. Although you personally do not agree their view. But these people, also human beings, also people, so they have right to carry their own views. So respect. So that's this basis of religious harmony. So these things are, I think, ancient Indian as a tradition. So these are not only ancient tradition, but also very much relevant today's world. So please, those people, you see, who have opportunity to share more people, please, you see, tell these ancient sort of your tradition and values. That's something very important. Whenever I give talk, I always mention these things are ancient Indian sort of tradition. So I simply messenger of these tradition. So sometimes I tell him, particularly when I met some sort of Indian spiritual leaders or spiritual practitioners, I always say, you are my guru. So guru's level, now I'm as a chela or kasor chuti, as a messenger level, quite active to mention these things, to share, to know more people. So now my boss, the guru's level, must be active. Not sufficient to carry some sort of your rituals and I said recite some difficult shloka of Sanskrit. That's not sufficient. You see, must come out and more contact with masses, particularly the younger generation, educated people, and make these thousand-year-old tradition is very much relevant to today's world. Look, some places in the name of religion, fighting, killing. Very sad. Among same Christian, sometimes conflict. Among same sort of Muslim, And then recently in Burma, this area. So actually, I think the economy reasons, but use the name of religion. So some conflict, Muslim and Buddhist, and Sri Lanka, Buddhist and Hindus. So now, these sort of 1,000-year-old Indian tradition is a must sort of make known, and we should be more active to educate more people. So, this is number one. Then, now another level, believer. On that level, basically, theistic religions, non-theistic religions. For example, within this country, I think, almost I think 3,000-4,000 years, different spirituality start, right? Now, I think according to some sort of translation from Indian text, the Sangha philosophy, Sangha tradition is the earliest sort of non-Buddhist tradition. And then from there, then more, because of that, one root, Sangha philosophy, then more sort of branches. So within Sangha, according to Tibetan translation, I think Arya Deva's text and Vivavega's,
Bhava Viveka.
Usually, no difficulty. Today, I found it a little difficult to pronounce. Kasa.
Bhava Viveka. No.
I cannot pronounce properly. Okay. That great scholar. and also Shandarakshita. And Shandadeva also, to some extent. And then Dignak, Dharmakirti. Mainly, you see, these great masters of Nalanda, their writing, I think practically at that time sort of existing all Indian philosophical thoughts mentioned. So within Sangha philosophy, there are two categories. One category, no concept of creator. Another category of Sangha, accept creator. Then many others, you see, accept creator, Brahma, like that. Then Jainism, no concept of creator. And almost at the same period, Buddha came. Mahavira and Buddha. I think except a few, 30-40 years differences, otherwise the same. So these two great masters, you see, no concept of creator. So three traditions. One part of Sangha and Jainism, and Buddhism, these three, non-theistic. And on the world also, I think Judaism, Zoroastrianism, and Judaism, and Christianity, and Islam, all accept the Creator. So I think non-theistic religion, I think only these three, I think ancient religion, ancient Indian religion, one part of Sangha philosophy, Sangha school of thought, and then Jainism and Buddhism. So now, when we look philosophical field, big differences, even within a theistic sort of believer, there are differences. as far as I know, the Muslim Allah, one God, only God. The Christianity, Trinity. Although I think maybe same God, I don't know. Three gods or same God, Trinity. What? Okay. Then later, Sikhism. I think very open-minded in the spirit of non-sectarian. And the Guru Nanak even took pilgrimage to Mecca, isn't it? So this is a very clear sign, non-sectarian. Respect all existing sort of beliefs, faiths. Wonderful. So in spite of different, big differences in philosophical field, but all carry same practice or same teaching of love, compassion, with that, tolerance, forgiveness, and individual contentment. How the new Pope, which seems, I think, very simple, sort of simple way of life, isn't it? I heard, you say, he sort of, they sort of talk with people on a human level, not much sort of kasuta, not much distance, wonderful. And on according to BBC, you see, he also, you see, managed his own food. Then in that case, you see, he much advanced than me. I never made my own food. Even making tea are difficult. I don't know. Particularly with salt. How much salt necessary, I don't know. So many Christian brothers, sisters, when I visited their nunnery and monasteries, their life, very simplicity. They very much emphasize simplicity. Right? No. Wonderful. Sometimes I feel with Tibetan monk, maybe more luxuries. Those some Christian monks, monastery. Really wonderful. So all this, and then many people, some Muslims also, some Christians, really totally dedicated their life for serving other people, poor people. Now in India, some of our settlement in different sort of states, most of these are settlement in remote area, tribal area. So difficult, quite remote. But I found some Christian nuns, working in this remote area. Teacher, working as a teacher, or as a sort of the medical, as the workers, like that. So that kind of such sort of dedication, hold their life, come from their own faith, like late Mother Teresa. So it is clearly demonstrated. You see, in spite of different philosophy, some say there's creator, some say no creator, but real practice is concerned, all these sincere practitioners really practice compassion, out of compassion, you see, serving people, particularly needy people. Wonderful. So therefore, there is sufficient reason, respect all those major religious traditions. A different philosophy, the same potential to create a sensible, good human being, compassionate good human being. So that's the basis of mutual respect. And once we develop admiration, mutual admiration, then there is tendency to learn their tradition, their philosophical views. So through that way, mutual learning also comes. So that's the basis of genuine harmony among the different traditions. So each have their own sort of unique thing, which to certain people, they, because of mental disposition, is suitable. That sort of particular way of approach is more effective. So that's quite understandable. Among the Buddha's own follower, he taught sort of different philosophical views. It appears contradictory, but that Buddha deliberately taught because that sort of particular philosophical view is suitable to that particular person. So different, because of this different mental disposition, and also from the Buddhist viewpoint, also is it due to previous karmic or previous kasada?
No, karmic.
Imprint.
No. Imprint. No.
Impaksha.
No.
Or previous of imprints. So there are so many different mental dispositions. Even you see twins, different mental disposition, always there. You can't sort of explain thoroughly from physical particles. So including some sort of say imprint. That's quite mysterious, of course. So like that, therefore, you see, among Buddha's own follower, you see, because of different mental disposition, Buddha taught different contradictory philosophy. So as a Buddhist, what we learn from that sort of situation? Yes, on this planet. Now, for example, today, about 7 billion human beings there, and different location, different climate, different way of life, different style of food. So, different sort of culture, different sort of mentality there. So, we really need different way of approach, you see, to cultivate love, compassion, forgiveness, these things. So once we recognize this fact, then we develop mutual respect, mutual admiration, like that. One time in Vienna, some meeting. That meeting took place in a monastery, Christian monastery. So I think 2 days, some sort of discussion meeting. Then next early morning, I think because it was my meeting with the chancellor, Austria chancellor, so I left early morning from that monastery. So as usual, sort of my practice, before leaving that monastery, I pay my respect to Jesus Christ, the statue of Jesus Christ in their main chapel, right?
Chapel.
I spent a few moments. Then I reflect, millions of people, you see, get immense sort of benefit from Jesus Christ. So during the reflect these things, and tear comes in my eye. Oh, really wonderful. That does not mean I accept Creator. No. I have plenty of reasons to argue the concept of Creator. Because Dignak, and particularly Dharmakirti, really, you see, put a lot of reasons, argument. If you accept creator, there are a lot of problems here among his own creations there. And creator, no beginning, no end, means permanent. The source is permanent. Then the creator must be either never happen or permanent. These are the main sort of reasons Dharmakirti is raised, these questions. And of course, I think I mentioned, I think previous our meeting also I mentioned one of my sort of friend, very religious minded. He asked me, very sincerely, all human beings, or all whole world created by God, full of mercy, full of love. And among his creatures, a lot of sort of mischievous people there. So why? The creator created such mischievous people. He sincerely asked me this question. What your answer? You.
What would be your answer?
So that, you see, because I know him, so I half joke. I told him, oh, because you see, God creates hell, so there must be some people who have to go hell. Otherwise, no use to create hell. So in any way, I really, you see, respect or admire these Christianity, and also Islam. Now, sometimes you see, nowadays you see, people have the wrong impression. Islam is more militant religion. Totally wrong. And also the very word jihad. My friend, Islam, a Muslim friend here, and also I sort of discussed with some professors of Islam. They say the very meaning of jihad is combat your own negative sort of negative action, negative emotion, these things. So there's every religion to teach us when we about to develop negative, harmful emotion, we must combat, we must face that and try to minimize, right? Try to neutralize, like that. So also I think I mentioned, perhaps I think many occasions I mentioned the Fatima in Portugal. You see, there's one small statue of Mary. So one occasion, as a part of my sort of practice, pilgrimage to different holy places. So one time I have opportunity,
to go on pilgrimage to Fatima.
So on this size of Mary statue, as usual, some Christian brothers, sisters, and myself, we just sit together and some silence meditation. Then, finishing that, we about leaving. So then I turn back the small statues, Mary statue. Actually, that Mary statue smiling. I look again, looks as if smiling. So it seems the Mary, so much of loving kindness there, so he do not sort of distinction Buddhist or non-Buddhist, not much sort of differences. or Christians or non-Christians, not much differences. So that I really felt, oh yes, I really respect all these major religions. I admire, I appreciate. So the Mary seems to say, acknowledge my sincere sort of hasoda.
Sincerity.
So we can practice. We can develop. genuine respect to all religions. Meanwhile, preserve your own practice. So here, important, faith and respect make differences. Differences, right? Respect. All major religious tradition. Admire. Appreciate. And meantime, your own sort of faith remain kasota, without mixing these things. So now that is the second. Now, theistic religion, non-theistic religion. Now, non-theistic religion, three major, mainly three. So within three non-theistic religion, differences, now question of Atma. Sangya philosophy, and all the branch, all sort of school of thought, which come from Sangya philosophy, all except Atma theory. And Jainism also. Now, only Buddhism do not have concept of Atma. So therefore, so Buddhism, Buddha, right from the beginning, say Anatma theory. Dharma Vedawa. Mida Dunga Don Dami Shisati.
So Buddha teaches.
Buddha teaches.
No. So the Buddha teaches.
Louder.
Four things, about which are impermanence of things, and selflessness or emptiness of things, as well as the selflessness of things.
Mm-hmm. So, the Four Noble Truths, Buddha sort of the first of the Dharma wheel, he taught Four Noble Truths. So there, he mentioned Anathema theory. So that's the basis of all Buddhist school of thought. The original sort of the Four Noble Truths that accepted all Buddhist school of thought. Then further sort of definition about anathema or shunya. Then you see Buddha himself, you see, taught different levels. Prajaparamita Sutra. And many other sutras. And then he taught, and also some sutra which the root text of Chitta Mantra philosophy, all these Buddha taught, but it's a different meaning of emptiness or shunyata. So all these, the root is Anathema theory. So that's the now differences about Buddha Dharma. Now Buddha Dharma, the after Buddha enlightened, his first Dharma wheel, he taught Four Noble Truths. Then after some time, then he taught the Prajaparamita Sutra. And then another Dhamma wheel. But you see, it seems quite clear. The Four Noble Truths in the Pali language, I think later you see the edit in Pali language. So that's more or less publicly. Then the Prajaparamita Sutra, such sort of teaching, not publicly sort of taught, but selected audience. So Chagupur Kasa.
Vulture Peak.
In that place, I think obviously, you see, he selected audience, then you see taught that. If you do not accept these teachings are not true Buddhist teaching, then ultimately we have to accept like Nagarjuna, you see, these great Nalanda masters, you see, their wisdom, their intelligence is sharper and greater than Buddha. This is that. If you read, you see, the Pali sort of the script, the Buddha's own sort of teaching, and then those Nagarjuna's, their writing. You see, their way of analyze, very sharp, very scientific. So that we can't accept. And then Nagarjuna, these are the great sort of pandits, great sort of masters. So I often used to tell him, occasionally I tell him, as far as Indian history is concerned, Nagarjuna should know better than Western scholars. Firstly, he was Indian. Secondly, his time is only, I think, 300-400 years after Buddha, much closer than after 2,500 years, somewhere scholars, isn't it? Then most important, the judging Nagarjuna's writing, his mind is very sharp, not dull person. He not easily accept what others say. He never acted like yes minister. Sometimes you see religious sort of follower, very faithful, whatever their teachers say, yes, 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 that's almost like yes minister. So Nagarjuna, not that kind. Buddha's own word, he analyzed. This Buddha's statement, right?
No.
Statement. We cannot accept literally, because if you accept that, then contradictory sort of things will come. So we have to, because of that, take different interpretation. We cannot accept literally. So Nagarjuna and all his followers, like that kind of thinking, always try to investigate through reasoning. And of course, these people, through their own experiences, although Nagarjuna too early, some of the Tibetan masters, through their own experience, you see, they show us, you see, certain things. Even my own generation, of course, I have no experience, but my sort of previous generations, you see, I know some of them, some kind of extraordinary experiences. I personally know. So therefore, it's a combined intellectual understanding and then through practice, actual experiences. So through that way, you see, like Nagarjuna, these, you see, accept the Sanskrit tradition originally taught by Buddha himself, not publicly. So, two sort of traditions, Pali tradition, Sanskrit tradition. And Nalanda practiced both, about Vinaya. Now, even today, same Burma, Thailand, Sri Lanka, so on, these Theravada sort of countries, right? Their Vinaya practice is same as our sort of Vinaya practice. I think two or three years ago, one, World Parliament of Religion. Of course, first I think in Chicago or something, then South Africa, and then some different places. I always participated. Then one occasion, I think the last one in
Melbourne.
I think some of you, I think already know, some I think knew. There, among the delegates, one from Burma, so two Burmese monks there. So they sent a message to me, they want to see me. And I have deep respect or admonition about Burmese Buddhist tradition. Guinganji's sort of practice, you see, the lineage from Burma. So I have sort of deep sort of admiration. So when I heard there's a two Burmese monk, bhikshu, who want to see me, then in my room, I myself also used to wear this yellow robe and receive them, receive the two monks from Burma. And we settled, and he, the Burmese monk, has told me, we are the follower of same Buddha Shakyamuni. However, we have many differences. Then I immediately felt, oh, now wrong information. Some sort of Western writers, you see, they describe Tibetan Buddhism as Lamaism, not genuine, authentic Buddhism. Then secondly, Tibetan Lamas themselves, you see, prove we are not genuine Nalanda tradition. We have quite free. Wear monk's robe with wife. Drink. Vinaya never allowed that. So I think some of our own people sometimes, you see, disgrace oneself. Disgrace oneself. And then, so, you see, some writer described Tibetan Buddhism as Lamaism, not genuine Buddhism. So I immediately felt, oh, the two Burmese, the wonderful two monks, I think got wrong impression. Then I told, yes, there's differences. However, the basis of a Buddha Dharma is Vinaya practice. So our Vinaya, except our Vinaya lineage is Mula Savasadvata. Then in Pali tradition, mostly Theravada sort of tradition. So we checked differences about Pratimoksha. Pratimoksha in Pali, Pratimoksha in Sanskrit. We are Pratimoksha in Sanskrit. So in our Pratimoksha, 253 rules, precepts. And Pali, 220. Or 227 or something like that. So, we already study these things or make comparison. So therefore, I explain all the Vinaya practice and our precepts on these things. Then these two monks, say, showing me a little bit of surprise. Oh, you also have these kind of practice. So these are same practice. Actually, basis of a Buddha Dharma. Nalanda, like Nagarjuna, great sort of bhikshu. His lineage is our sort of the lineage same. He was one of the sort of the earliest lineage. Buddha's own son, Rahul. Then I think few generations. Then Nagarjuna. Then through that way, the Shatrakshita. Shatrakshita invited by Tibetan emperor in 8th century. So he gave ordination, bhikshu ordination. Our lineage is come from him. So like that. So Pali tradition and Sanskrit tradition. De Kasajuti. Nalanda tradition combined both. I think Takshashila, like the Kasachuti, Bosubad. I think he also studied Takshashila, I think. His writing, Abhidhammakosha Karika. I think original Sanskrit or Pali. Sanskrit way. Any writing in Pali or from these great Nalanda masters? You do not know. So then Tibet Buddhism, as I mentioned earlier, and 7th century, and particularly 8th century, Buddha Dharma already flourished in China. I think at least 2-3 centuries earlier. So through marriage, Tibetan 7th century Tibetan emperor Songtsen Kambo married with one Chinese princess. So when Chinese princess came to Lhasa, he brought one important Buddha statue. And he also married with one Nepalese princess. So that also is brought one Buddha statue. These two Buddha statues consider a very, very important sort of sacred Buddha statue in Lhasa. Yeah. So the family ties already there, the through marriage, already there. But then, 8th century, the Tibetan emperor prefer, as far as Buddhism is concerned, they prefer deal directly with India. So 8th century at that time, one of the top master of Nalanda institution, Shantarakshita, he invited. Then Shantarakshita's age already over 70, 75 or something like that. According to Tibetan belief, 900 years. So one of my Indian friend, you see, jokingly told me, or Tibetan font, you see, long life. So therefore, they put additional zero. So 90 become 900. So anyway, you see, I think it is quite common, right? No. Late 70s, right? Late 70s, his age, no. Over 70s, he invited by Tibetan emperor, he came. Then he start translation and give teaching, give vows, bhikshu vows, because of the shaman area and bhikshu, all these, you see, he introduced. And then meantime, the 7th century, the King Songtsen Kambo introduced Tibetan script, copy one of the ancient Indian Dabnik, the Devanagari, no. Devanagari script. So some of the Ashoka pillars writing, we do not understand the meaning, but we can read like that. So some similar sort of
letters, similar
like that. Then grammar, copy the Indian grammar, Sanskrit grammar, like that. So I think over 1,000 years since then, I think Anjo Jingne Chao Ngaslujane Tarjipat Likdua, Sanskrit Lakor.
So amongst the five major subjects that we consider, amongst there is also this Sanskrit, which we learn.
Oh. I also, you see, this lazy, poor student also, you see, learn Sanskrit, the grammar part. My teacher, my senior tutor. When I received a lesson from him, he told me one particular text, Takalapa. The text. Kalapa text. I say, my tutor, he also studied the Kalapa. So when he give me explanation, last 30 years, after he learned, then after 30 years, he never touched that book. Then he told me, last 30 years, he never sort of looked at that text. Oh, I may not say that a very clear memory. But then when actually he explained, his memory very sharp. Like that, I also used to learn. So that's part of our study, not Chinese language, but Sanskrit language. So So as a Tibetan, we, since I think 7th century, 8th century, we developed very, very close link with Nalanda traditions. So, now, last like, several years, I think few decades, I start to introduce Tibetan Buddhism as pure Nalanda tradition, Nalanda lineage. If, say, a Mahayana tradition or Hinayana tradition, that creates more confusion. Simply Nalanda tradition. Then it's quite clear, like that. So, 9th century, then Tibetan king, Khansa Jyoti, Mata Chirabache, killed. Then eventually disintegrated. I think few centuries remain like that. Four centuries. And then eventually the small Tibetan kingdom in the western part of Tibet, the capital Tulim. So then he tried to follow his sort of, because of the, his ancestors' sort of practice. He firstly sent some his best sort of Buddhist masters sent to India and study. And then, according these people, at that time, one sort of say, well-known master was Atisha Dimungara from Bangalore. Kasa, from Bangalore. From Bengali.
Bengal.
So eventually he invited. When the Atisha Dimungara reached Western Tibet, Tulim, then he wrote this text. Now this text on. So all Tibetan the lineage after him, then Nyingma, Gyu, Sakya, all is to follow the Adishan Dipankara sort of this short text. Like Nyingma Longjin Rabjamba, his sort of writing, some important writing according to this text. And then Gyu Nyami Tapulhaji, so writing follow this text. Then Sakya Lamje, part of Nangsum follow this teaching. And then Kadamba, of course, his own sort of lineage. Then Lama Tsongkhapa, Gelug, also used to follow this text. And so this become root text of all different lineage of Tibet after Krishna. 10th century, 11th century, like that. Then I received oral transmission about this teaching, this text, from one Kunu Lama, Rinzi Thapa, one good scholar of Devu Monastery. He actually he has what incidentally. Now, in any way, I think 1947, one conference took place. Then Mahatma Gandhi there. So Tibetan delegation participated. So among them, one Tibetan scholar, some Tibetan scholar should be included, that kind of sort of discussion happened. So, among old scholars, Kenji Zitamba, his birthplace, Kino area. So he speaks Hindi. Meantime, good scholar. So therefore, he included the delegation. So later, you see, he became my teacher. I received a lot of teaching from him, oral transmission. So one day he casually told me he was one of the member of that delegation. So in Delhi, the Mahatma Gandhiji, you see, want to see him. And he met. And Mahatma Gandhiji, you see, inquired some important sort of text about their study. And he mentioned Lamjun, this one. He told me. He mentioned Atisha Dibhumkara, you see, wrote one sort of text that we consider top most important text, short text. Rinpoche told me like that. So I received oral transmission from him. Wonderful monk. When I received teaching from him, of course, I offer him tea, Tibetan tea. So he enjoyed the tea, and then some cause of butter, he chews on my face. Oh, wonderful. Wonderful teacher. I received, I think, oral transmission from him. I think many thick books, which very rare. My official two teachers didn't have that kind of oral transmission. So I received from him. And then also Kunalaman Shtenzi Tenzin, basically non-sectarian, great teacher. His own family background, Kachuba. But then he received a lot of teaching from Nyingma, from Sakya, from Gilu. Wonderful. So now, this text, because the king, the Khasa Chukuti, Tuling Jebu, Ngari Chukye.
No, the Dharma king of lived in the western part of Tibet, Ngari.
See, he requested to Atisha, he would like to have one short sort of writing and quite simple and mainly focusing on Kasoda
cultivation.
The practice charge.
To the cultivation.
Or without much sort of debate.
No.
Unlike the Kamala Shila, the student of Shantarakshita. Shantarakshita invited to Tibet and then passed away. Then his main student, Kamala Shila, also invited to Tibet, 9th century. He wrote three texts. Of course, he wrote, I think, at least two texts in India. One, Madhyamaka philosophy, one, logic. Very, very sort of difficult. Very sort of kazore.
It's a classic text.
Classic text. So after he invited to Tibet, then he wrote three texts. That also, you see, raised a lot of questions and debate. So that's Nalanda type. Nalanda's, all those masters of Nalanda, they are sort of style is raise all the sort of questions, opposing questions, where?
No.
Opposing
questions.
Questions. Then answer. or debate. So the Tisha Devankara, not that style, but quite simple way, mainly the audience mainly already as of the following Buddha Dharma. The other text among sort of different sort of because of different views,
right.
People who have different views, then she explained about Buddha Dharma. So a lot of discussions, a lot of sort of raised questions and debate. That thing is Lungke Lomoche. I am not reading this, just you see, simply explain.
So His Holiness will not go through the text verse by verse as such, as part of the oral transmission.
At the beginning, you see, he mentioned, he categorized three levels, Gibu Chungu, Gibu Jing, Gibu Chambu.
So he makes these three distinctions amongst the practitioners, which are the beings with a small scope or faculty, and then middling and supreme faculties.
The Jing. Dumda Dhamma Keshav Kemari, Chulu Dhamma Keshav Kemari, Mwanzu, Chu Yamni Singh, Sosu, Yuzu, Temeng Tane, Rubasum Chevda.
So, this, the categorization of beings into these three types is not about not taking into account the different philosophical traditions that they follow or anything like that, but then it mainly focuses on what kind of or disposition the practitioners have.
So mainly those people who see or see they get used some kind of say importance, right? Importance of this life, and mainly the sources of sensorial level pleasure. So that's obstacle, first level of obstacle. So we must reduce that kind of sort of strong feeling. So not too much emphasis, importance of sensorial level sort of experiences, but rather mental level. So obviously, sensorial level, all these facilities are just for this life. When death comes, no longer any use. But certain sort of quality which develop on mental level, that impact next life. So the first level, try to reduce too much emphasis about this life because of the material values. I think we can say that.
We are on verse number 4, which says, those who seek peace for themselves alone, turning their back on worldly pleasures and avoiding destructive actions are said to be... And verse number 3. Know that those who, by whatever means, seek for themselves no more than the pleasures of cyclic existence are persons of the least capacity.
Sachin, Tseji Kuga Yingwe, Lya Jambayangi, Shesin, Sungshavati, Tisungyari, Tsen Dilishana, Chiba Minz, Tsen Dijangyam Samda Devina, and Sanjeva Chivetra Chugmaris.
So in one of his visions of Lord Manjushri, the Sakya master, Sachin Kunkha Nyingpo, received this teaching from Manjushri, where Manjushri said to him, if you are attached to this life, the pleasures of this life, then you are not a practitioner of the Buddha Dharma. And if you are attached to samsara, the cycle of existence, then you do not have a renunciation.
Doctrine is a chance means. So, to the Samdadana, Changes and Benjamin, the Yumo.
And if you are attached to selfish goals, then you are not a practitioner of the bodhisattva path. And if
you cling
to objectivity of things, and things have some kind of objective existence, then you have not realized the view of emptiness. So with regard to this verse that we read, what it is talking about is basically, first of all, we can make distinction between two types of beings of small capacity. One type is those who are attached, as I've explained already, those who are obsessed with the pleasures of this life alone. And this is what we are not, this type of persons or beings are not considered here. But then this verse actually refers to are those who are not attached to the pleasures of this life alone, but who wish to have reach or to be reborn in a higher rebirth in the next life, and then accordingly apply themselves in the practice of avoiding the negative actions and cultivating the positive actions. In other words, cultivating the 10 or overcoming or avoiding 10 non-virtuous actions and practicing the 10 virtuous actions. So such beings are referred to by this verse.
Perhaps I think we can say the person who want present our sort of the positive life, all the facilities there, and comparatively less sort of problem. So this kind of sort of the civil punzo, mandu punzo, data yaudu sam.
So by acknowledging that the excellent facilities and things that we experience in this life to be good, and the positive things that we have in this life to be good, and then aspiring to have this kind of experience in the next life, and accordingly you think of reaching or obtaining a higher rebirth.
So then, this very life, we can see some are quite miserable. Of course, there are many other factors there, but main factor is one's own previous karma. Karma means action. So those people who in the past, not only this life, but past life, also you see there some sort of negative activities, harming other people. Now, for example, killing or stealing, sexual misconduct, or because of that, rape, right? And then telling lies. All these result, even human life, some kind of problems, you see, happen. Therefore, now, in order to have next life, the proper human beings and born proper sort of because of the human society, that we must cultivate the causes of that result. And we must avoid the causes which we born and difficult lives. even born in among human beings, still difficult lives. So mainly it's focusing quite sort of quite satisfactory as of the human life or worldly life. Then similar sort of continuously in next lives also using this kind of sort of what's it say, the quite okay life. So now method, then non-virtues.
To avoid doing the 10 non-virtuous actions.
Restrain, committing non-10 virtues. And simply restrain, not committing non-10 virtues is the virtuous, 10 virtues.
So restraining yourself from committing the 10 or refraining from the 10 non-virtuous actions itself is the practice of the 10 virtuous actions.
The Kangxi term in Kanda is Koya Dawa Zamdala Rani Tundu Nyesu Jibutin Tamar Shisya. That then Nibadi the second level the now the second level, analyze whether this level, our mind, which easily manipulated by negative emotion, even though we want to be a nice person, but anger comes, or suspicion comes, then that, you see, the mind immediately,
Disturbed.
So we realize that. And then, now target is the Kleshas is the real enemy. I must not allow the control of Kleshya
to control me.
That's now second level. So all these life, which ultimately not on our control, in our control, but due to our negative action also is to come through the negative emotion. Negative emotion come from ignorance. So in order to control all these, we have to eliminate because of the
ignorance.
The ignorance also, there are different levels. In order to eliminate those
those
ignorance which causing our samsaric rebirth. Now that that's aim, you should try to eliminate that sort of the ignorance. Then once that ignorance eliminates, then automatically all destructive emotion no longer develop. So that actually we call nirvana, moksha. Moksha means liberation. From where you liberate? From klesh. In order to liberate klesh or in order to eliminate klesh, we must know the sources or basis of all this destructive emotion. That's ignorance. Ignorance, there are many different levels of ignorance. So that I think come later. So in order to eliminate ignorance, the real sort of antidote of ignorance is wisdom. Wisdom which understands shunyata. So now Buddhists, you see, the atma, the sort of
concept.
Of course, those people is who practices atma for meditation, atma, and even sort of what's the day, rituals based on atma. Okay, that's their own sort of way of tradition. Then from Buddhist viewpoint, from Buddhist practitioner, then I. Naturally, we have some kind of the feeling of I. So we never feel this body Now, for example, my own sort of body with white hair, because of white hair, white hair, and also some white hair here. I never thought when I born, this white hair origin there. You never feel that, isn't it? So this body, actually at the time of birth, this body, of course, the original, because of continuation of this body there, but we never feel this old body at that time. Therefore, we say now old body, or young body, child body, like that. But all this child body, old body, young body, all this belongs to I. When I was young, when I was in mother's womb, I still there. So we not feel different eyes, same eye. So there is some kind of tendency. Physical mind is the
possessor.
And the owner or possessor is I. I was young, young body. I was at uneducated, young child. Then education, my mind changed, but same I. So there is that kind of tendency. I is more or less permanent. Body and mind changing. So that's natural feeling. So that's hanging.
So we have this innate sort of sense of I, which is kind of seen as if it's like a ruler or of our body and mind.
So even Buddhism, who denying the independent I, self. But still, you see, there is a lot of debate and different views. The connection, because of the 생각하면 니네 치면 삼장에 가려서.
So there are questions raised in the classic text where it's, they say that, what is it that connects one from the past to the present and present to the future?
Obviously, at the time of death, this body, no longer, no continuation. And mind, which come from this body, so the brain, that also cease. So then what else is connected with next life? Unless, you see, you develop the deeper understanding, self is mere designated sort of phenomena based on body and mind. And body and mind also, grosser level of body and mind, subtle level body and mind, and most subtle level of body and mind. Unless we understand, we get some sort of understanding, right?
No.
Some knowledge about this difficult, the connection, previous life, from this life, next life. So non-Buddhist, particularly those you see, who accept previous life and next life, the connection from previous life, this life to next life, Atma. Doesn't matter. This body and mind change, but same Atma. So therefore, Atma is permanent, never changing, and essentially separate from this body and mind. Then difficulty is, if you see Atma is completely separate from this body, then even I think obviously we can't make distinction male and female. Atma is independent. Male and female based on physical. So no connection. Male Atma, female Atma cannot say. Young Atma, old Atma, sick Atma, uneducated Atma cannot say. Because you see, the mind and body completely Atma is completely separate from body and mind. So we have to sort of, obviously, there's close connection, self, and self, sort of body and mind. Then, within the Buddhist school of thought, the I think mainly Chitta Mantra, you see, except Shabakyaba Kunshisati.
Yes. So Chitta Mantras accept the eighth consciousness, which is called Alaya Vijana.
So
the eighth consciousness, according to Chitta Mantra, is called Alaya Vijana, or I think it's called foundational consciousness.
So eight minds, usually six minds. The Chitta Mantra, eight minds. So because, you see, they want to pinpoint something which carry from previous life, this life, next life. So there are a lot of... And then also imprints, where imprints remain. This body, this mind, at the time of death, no longer there. So where imprints remain. So here is a continuation of mind. Mind also is a grosser level of mind and subtle level of mind and a very subtle level of mind. When brain stop, brain sort of blood circulation stop, brain dead, then those mind which based on brain
cells,
then no longer function. So stop. So more subtle level. So at the time of death, eight stages of dissolution. Solid means earth means solid. Solid,
liquid,
heat, air, space. Go like that. And space or consciousness, and then space. Here, two space, external space, internal space. Internal space is very, very subtle level of consciousness. All the grosser level of consciousness completely cease. Then subtle level, innermost of subtle level, still remain. Within there, four stages. So these, I think, satisfactory explanation come from Guhi Samanza, Tantra, Tantric sort of text. And as I mentioned earlier, some people have actually experienced these the stages of dissolution, like that. Some, even today, some of my friends, you see, who practice seriously last 30, 40 years, you see, they have the experience with the dissolution of these different minds. So now, unless you found what's the understandable sort of what's the because of the concept, the basis of the imprints and also continuation. At the same time, close connected with this body and mind. Unless you find that kind of sort of thorough understanding or explanation, you see, difficult once you deny existence of Atma. And then you see these kasota two yadis in Ganga tradition.
So while you may be able to deny the existence of an Atma as such, but then if you don't understand these subtle levels of the mind and the, which happens during the dissolution processes and the, going down
four,
to the subtlest
or three.
One, then you will not be able to
bring
up a good understanding of the position to say what connects us from the past, what has connected us from the past to this life and from this to the next life.
I don't understand your attitude. Yes, like that. No, that's what I don't know. So break, tea break. Good, tea break. So then, after tea break, I would like to take some questions. Even some I would like to discuss.
Yes, if you have a question, if you could raise your hand, and we will rush a microphone to you.
Your Holiness, I had a few questions arising from the Atisha's lamp for the path to enlightenment. First of all, I have been a civil servant, and I would, of course, like to aspire to a path of enlightenment. But the way to get there that has been described, is it possible? My question to you is it possible for a civil servant? Because I don't mean it from the manner in which the others are laughing, but until I attain enlightenment, I shall not harbor harmful thoughts, which have been described as anger, avarice, or envy. Now, I find that what has motivated me best as a civil servant is that when I see injustice, it arouses anger. And if it does not arouse anger, I really don't know how I would have acted. But if I have had a limited success in the service, it is because my anger has been aroused, and therefore I have taken what action I felt was necessary. Also, it says that those observing pure conduct should not take the secret and wisdom initiations. Now, what are the secret and wisdom initiations? Of course, I have been Chief Information Commissioner, and therefore I would like all information to be made public. But setting that aside, what are the secret and wisdom initiations which it is required? Because it says, should not take the secret and wisdom initiations. And finally, if I may ask this question, that since this is based on the Bodhisattva, the teachings of Bodhisattva, I'm not very clear. I have attended many of your sessions, Your Holiness, but I'm not very clear on the exact definition of the Bodhisattva's vow, which is described in this presentation. Thank you.
First question.
Civil servant, and the
Then I think let us discuss about the first question. The precepts, minor precepts of Bodhisattva vow, the 46 minor precepts. One of them is the circumstance is such you need some harsh method to stop that wrongdoing. If you do not do that, if you do not carry that, is one hazoda kasa
as one of the secondary infractions of the vows.
So it is wrong. You must act. The kasoda more so forcefully to stop that. So everything depends on motivation. I think obviously the good parent, good mother, if the child really say, you see, running a dangerous place, then father or mother shouting, if necessary, beat. Motivation is so they're out of sense of genuine care of the child. So that sort of
harsh method
is actually non-violence. Then I think you personally also may have some experiences. Some people try to cheating you, and you see the very nice words, and smile, and respect, and sometimes some gift. The action, non-violence, because of the motivation is, you see, negative. Therefore, violence. Clear. So sometimes my tutor, when I a little bit sort of negative about my study, my teacher used to look, so, oh, what happened here today? That kind of thing. I remember very clearly, one time so my teacher, you see, warned me, if you carry study very kasota, very easy way, like this, continuously, then the final examination, how can you carry final examination? Really, you see, a little bit sort of the negative face and harsh word. These are completely out of sense of care, sense of concern. So very positive. Now anger depends on motivation. This kind of immediately a little bit anger, but out of sense of concern, out of compassion, is positive anger. And you simply hate it. Out of hatred, anger is negative. So therefore, Vinaya level, mainly self-interest.
No.
Sosotava.
No.
Self-interest. Mm. So there are out of 253 precepts, many are siddhi kasota. Gosh.
No, many prohibit you to do.
Oh, prohibit. But then bodhisattva level, mainly concern of well-being of others. Then if circumstances is such, you need some harsh method. Even telling lies. Even highly necessary, even killing, violence, in order to save of interest for larger sort of community and the long-run benefit. Then, for example, Buddha's own previous life story. He was one of the merchants.
No. Merchants.
Merchants, about 500. So among them, one person who constantly sort of planning to kill rest of 499 sort of people and all the belongings owned by him. Then the leader warned him, should not do that. One time, four times. But he didn't stop. Then finally, the leader, which one of the previous life of the Buddha Shakyamuni, then he felt, if I so restrain killing this person, then he going to commit sin of 499 person killed. And he himself have to sort of face negative consequences from that sin. So then he killed one person, save that person's sort of commitment, because of commitment,
no,
499 person's killing, stop, cease. He himself sinned killing one person, but save life of 499 person. Then he chose this negative action, killing. So it become right. So like that. So the kasoda, many sort of kasoda prohibit or objection for. Now for example, gold, Vinaya Sutra, you should not touch gold. And out of Bodhisattva sort of precepts, if there is circumstances that someone offer you gold, and if you, according to Vinaya Sutra, you see, you don't touch, then that person disappoint. If there is such danger is there, you should touch, you should accept. So all these sort of practice depend on the actual sort of circumstances. And
you have to weigh the pros and cons.
Like that. Now, second question. Basically, Tantrayana, the very name is Guhe, secret. So that means, you see, such practice, ordinary people cannot practice properly. So better to keep secrecy. In ancient time, in Nalanda, in India, those Mahasiddhi, the initiation, all these, just one individual, you see, watch both sides. The disciple side, watch the teacher, guru, whether this is truly reliable, truly qualified or not. The guru side also is watching the supposed becoming disciple. If necessary, 12 years examine, watching, spying each other. One is truly reliable. And then some of these teachings give individually. I think we Tibetan, I think font, Tantrayana. So we give teaching Tantrayana thousands of people without knowing each other. So that, I think, I remember Professor Joshi of Patiala University or something. Right. Now he no longer. He wrote one book, and he himself, so while he alive, he gave me that copy of that book. It mentioned the causes of degenerate Buddha Dharma in this country. Number one, monk fond because of the material values and carry some business. So people gradually lose respect. Some monk, after the death, a lot of golds, a lot of good things, expensive things there. So you see, people, you see, lose respect. Number one. Second, the tantric practice, Kasota, without a proper sort of qualification. Now, for example, sex. The proper sort of sex, sexual sort of contact, the person should have full sort of, I mean, experience of full control about movement of kundalini, like that. So in order to practice that, in order to examine that, or in order to test that, one good teacher, now he also passed away, this is about, I think, 30 years ago, I have some discussion. You see, he, good monk, he mentioned, you know, the milk in a pot. Then your thing, you see, sucking milk from there. So that's the experiment. How much you have the ability to control. So the semen or kundalini come, but then control go back. Come, go back, come, go back. That's a real practice. So through that way, the grosser level of mind dissolve, become So inactive, because the kundalini movement, you see, some bliss. The bliss, you see, has a ticker.
No, trigger.
Trigger.
No.
The grosser level of mind, kasore,
to subside.
Neutralize. So that's the way. So one time, one lay person, Ubasika. I casually said, he had a wife. I casually asked, you have children? Then he answered me, no possible of children, because all sort of the movement of this, the
energies, energies.
Or the semen, never come out. Always you say, stop and go back. So no possibility to produce child. So that's the problem. Some of the, even you know, high lama, a lot of children, I don't know. Like that. So therefore, at that time, some Tibetan actually, you see, practice this thing, this secret thing, without a proper sort of preparation or without checking their own ability. So the Atisha reject, should not do that, like that. The third question, actually, such tantric practice is involve the breathing control breathing, right?
No.
And also the kundalini, chandalini. These are common. Hindu tantriyana and Buddhist tantriyana, common. So differences makes the understanding of anatma, understanding of shunyata. The Hindu tantriyana, you see, these practice combined with the concept of atma, here, atma. And then bodhicitta. So that makes differences. But the yoga practice itself, not much differences. And pa-jaya, pa.
And then there is also the practice of what is known as transferring or ejecting one's mind consciousness from out of the body.
Through meditation, you see, your mind separate from this body. It actually, you see, few cases in Tibet when you see some practitioner, some lama, carried by the Chinese army, Chinese police, in order to bring a confession or class struggle. It's some on the road, sitting, and then like that, then passed away. It happened. In the past also, is one Tibetan Lama. You see, he got some kind of accusation of criminal. So he brought to I think they
to the execution place.
Ha. Came to some court. Some question. So on the road, he told, you see, those people who bringing him, he told, let me sit. What happened? Oh, rest. And on a rock, he sat. Then the practice, you see, that separation of this body and mind, then die. So these practices also common. Non-Buddhist tantric practice and Buddhist tantric, Buddhist tantriyana. It's the same practice. So that's why, you see, this moment, recently, you see, my visit to Kumbh Mela, Mahakumbh Mela, I sent a message. I would like to meet some of the experienced meditator, I'm quite sure, I'm very, very eager, those sadhus who spend at least a few months or a few years in mountain area, completely naked. So they must have sort of experience about practice of Kundalini, inner heat. Otherwise, how can survive? Completely naked. Looks a little bit strange. Go like that. But actually, you see, really, one time in Delhi, one Jain temple. No. I think Kumar Khasa. One
Jain master.
Sushil Kumar or something. I think you know. Sushil Kumar.
Sushil Muni.
After he passed away, for his sort of memory, some sort of construction of one temple. In the open ceremony there, one Jain practitioner, Jain master there, completely naked. So I just usually sit next to him. I really usually develop admiration. He don't care about appearances. He firmly committed about his own practice, complete naked. So I sit next to him. I usually touch my head for his kasada.
Knee.
Oh, knee. I didn't notice his sort of instrument. Then afterward, my lesson officer, see, we always joking, teasing, and I asked him, have you seen that secret organ? He said, yes, yes. So such was a practitioner. I think very serious these are. Not pretended. Really serious. So I sent a message to the organizer in Mahakumbh Mela place. I would like to meet some of these practitioners. And then my visit could not materialize, as I mentioned before. So we really, I very, very eager, you see, to sit down with such practitioner and discuss, exchange our experiences. That's very, very helpful. Very helpful. So any of you, some connection, knowing some of such practitioner, then let me know. I really, very serious, discuss and exchange our experiences. Then eventually, I think very important to let carry experiment by scientist, as I mentioned. Oh, not this morning with student, I mentioned, this is some practitioner. Is that after death, their body remain fresh, including my own senior tutor. Next 13 days, his body remain fresh. And such sort of such case, you see, there are, I think at least, as far as we noticed, I think last over 50 years, I think at least 30 of them happen after death. Body remain very fresh. Some cases even 4 weeks remain. So as a result of discussion or mention these things with some scientists, so some scientists really, you see, show interest. Now already, you see, carries set up one sort of project to carry, investigate such sort of person. So one very senior sort of lama, actually head of Yellowhead sect from ordinary sort of monk, then Kasoda gradually become head of Yellowhead sect. He, I think, 18 days remain body fresh. 18 days. So one of sort of his disciple, his student, one I think American or English, he clearly recorded day by day what happened. So the local doctors also, you see, investigate. And then we already have some equipment to examine such dead body. So some wire is put on head. So some indication, extraordinary indication, is happening. Clinically, dead. But some movement in the brain. No breathing, no blood circulation. So the scientist, see, really, Kasoda, showing wandering red.
Show interest.
Now the problem, in the past, is in some cases, when such sort of event happen, equipment or the person who handled this equipment not available. Then the person and the equipment and the person available, not that kind of sort of death happen. And meantime, I cannot request, please you die, in order to carry our investigation. Also, it's not very sure. I request, if die, not happen that, then disaster. So just we have to wait. So now, recent years, you see, that equipment entered one trained person. Now, Dharamsala permanently remained there. So last week, one old monk, very weak body, usually weak body after death, very rare, that kind of meditation. But this, I think over 80 years, quite weak. But 5 days, his body remained fresh. So I'm wondering, I think among Indians, among Hindu practitioners, I think such experience should happen. But usually, you see, we do not take much sort of interest or notice. And also the cases express about past life. In 1970, I think 70s, I met two girls, one from Patiala, one from Kanpur. Kanpur, about 4 years old. Patiala, about 6 years old. Very clearly mentioned about memory, about past life, and the name of their past parent, and their home, their friends, like that. Among Tibetans also, is some such things which happen. So these are the phenomena. To those scientists, more open-minded scientists who look objectively, you see, they're also showing interest in further investigation. So, now next question. Not working.
Ritual,
it depends the performer's honor.
No.
The person who carries ritual. If truly experienced, and one time, I think most probably Miller Rabba, a well-known sort of practitioner. You see, sometimes you see, he in order to show other people, you see, his sort of the energy. So he concentrate rock, solid rock, and rock break through sheer sort of meditation. And then sometimes, you see, some of my friend, you see, fully concentrate. I think one Russian scientist also, I think some sort of the experiment. Fully concentrate. Actually, the purpose of shamatha is mobilize energy of mind. usually our mind is scattered. So you see, cannot, like water, scattered, not much force. In order to use for...
Producing energy.
Produce energy, you see, water must...
Generalize.
Then more force. So similarly, our mind, through meditation or shamatha, generalize. Then concentrate on particular sort of object and fully. Then some effect usually happen. Of course, I have no such experience. I wish such experience, but no, not yet. So it's a concentration power. You see, object can move. Like that. So ritual, person who really qualified, firstly, himself or herself, should have some experience. Then carry ritual, some effect. Yeah. But just read the text and with instrument made by gold, not much effect. Real effect here, like that. So I think for your question, the answer for your question is both yes and no. Yes means qualified one, carry that, yes. Usually, without real quality, just to carry as a sort of
custom
or culture. And then I think this one German. You German. So
take your mic.
Yes.
Your Holiness.
Keep there.
Just wait a minute. Yes.
Then okay. Yes.
Your Holiness, I was listening to you very carefully about Atma and Anatma. And I can't work it out, because if you die and there's no Atma, then what is it that remains? What is it that goes on?
Buddhist explanation is the I is designated on the combination of body and mind. And body and mind also grosser level, subtle level, very, very subtle level. So the very, very subtle level, very subtle body and subtle mind always together, combined. That's the basis of designation of self. So that combined subtle body, subtle mind, no beginning, no end. So designation of the I, on that, no beginning, no end. Clear? So the basis of imprint is that subtle mind. As we already discussed at the time of death, grosser level of body and speech and mind dissolve. Subtle level also dissolve. Then innermost of subtle level, after death, still body remain fresh, because subtle mind and subtle body remain within the body. As soon as that subtle body and mind separate from this body, then body decay immediately. Quite mysterious, isn't it? I think everybody have some sort of knowledge that some interest keep. Then at the time of death, then we have to carefully watch real experiences. Maybe too late. I feel like that in my daily sort of practice, yoga practice, the 8th stage of dissolution. I think 5 times, I always do, supposed to the preparation. when actual death comes. So whether succeed or not, I don't know. So experiment, as an experiment, time of sleep. Again, you see, you should have some sort of fuller knowledge, the stage of dissolution, what?
Dissolution process.
Process. Some knowledge. Then, at the time of sleep, you fully alert your mind. I must recognize the stages of these dissolutions. Too much alert, then destroy sleep. So you need
a balanced awareness.
Very clever way. Then there is possibility. First step, second step of dissolution, possible to recognize. Then fourth, fifth, difficult. Unless you have some sort of deeper experience. Then that only dream time. Remember this practice. Dream time, firstly, realize now I'm dreaming. I'm state of dreaming. Then deliberately meditate certain sort of place of chakra, mainly here. Then there's a possibility, dissolution, while you are dreaming because of the concentration, deliberately. That also possible. So then much easier to realize these different stages of dissolution. But not easy. Take time. You need first sort of step. You need to try to remember my kasota.
To be aware. Become aware.
Become aware at the dream time. Now I'm dreaming. So once you realize dream time, now I'm dreaming, I'm in the state of dream, then you can control dream. And one, my official, monk official, very honest, I think no point to tell lie to me. He mentioned his mother, I think that 1950s. His mother, you see, one day told him, now I'm going to sleep, long period. So during that sleep, you don't disturb my body, mother told. Then next 1 week, looks mother sleep. After 1 week, mother told him, during those days, mother separated his subtle being and body, grosser level of body, separated, and she visited different places. And she actually sort of telling what really happened in these places. Her dream body actually separated from the body and visited different places. I wish, you see, such sort of friend there. Then, as a government official, I would send to spy what you are doing. Or to China. The Politburo meeting. can watch. So, next question.
No.
Next question. Oh, then the German.
No. I have a question regarding death. Knowledge is only valuable to a limited extent unless we totally experience it. So, you briefly mentioned the eight stages of dissolution. I imagine there are only very, very few people who in their lifetime actually go through this death meditation process of these eight stages. And I also imagine that those people who actually did live through these stages will not talk about it. So how do we know that these eight stages exist? And second, why is it in Buddhism, in Tibetan Buddhism, of such importance, for example, in death meditation, visualization, for example, of Yamantaka? So why is the power of visualization of such importance?
That, as I already mentioned, you see, some people, even you see, the sick people, some medical doctors, they notice, you see, some patient, you see, some kind of sort of deep consciousness, right? No. Some kind of dream-like sort of experience, you see, usually happen. So there are some similarities. Then I have one sort of my friend who now practice seriously in these, let's say, the tantric practice or meditation. Last, now I think more than 30 years, he actually, when meditate, he remained in meditation, deep meditation, 3 hours. So he actually experienced the different stages. But there are also, you see, 8 different sort of stages. Also, you see, grosser and subtler, many differences. So grosser level of at least 4th, 5th sort of dissolution indication he actually experienced. He told me. There's no reason he tell me lie. Quite reliable, quite knowledgeable. So I believe that. And then also, you see, some of my friend, some practitioner, you see, they meditate at the grosser level of mind, becoming more kasoda, inactive. Then subtle minds sort of experience. Then memory about past life become clear. Actually, you see, one my friend, now no longer. He told me like that. Again, that person, not liar.
So these people who experience these 8 stages of dissolution in life, they speak about it? It is kind of conveyed to others? Or how do I have to understand that this knowledge of the 8 stages exists? If those, what I would assume...
I mean, actually experienced. So in the text mentioned, these text, you see, wrote by, like Nagarjuna, I think quite reliable sources, not drunk, oh, not some sort of, so they, sometimes you see, seller of Dharma. In China also now, because this is some Buddhist faith growing, so some, you see, false Lama from Tibet, actually seeking money or sex. No experience, but claim or higher Lama. So number of Chinese, you see, told me their disappointment, met such people. Initially, they really, because of the full faith, then gradually they noticed not genuine, sort of, say, Dharmaraja. So like Nagarjuna and his disciple, Aryadeva, and Chandrakirti, they wrote very clearly. And then in Tibet, among Gurdjieffa, among Gelugpa, among Satyapa, among Nyingmapa, number of stories there. Then Lama Tsongkhapa also, you see, exclusive experience. We can see his writing in early life. He just mentioned, it state that. The later part of his writing clearly shows speaking from his own experience, very clear. So we can rely where?
No.
Their words. And then actual sort of experience, existing, my generation, some actual sort of experiences happen. So then it confirmed that. That did it. In Buddhism, we categorize three levels.
So when we talk about phenomena, things, there are three categories. The first is things which are obvious that we can see with our senses. And then the second category is the slightly hidden phenomena. And then the third is a very hidden phenomena.
Hmm? So the third level and the second level both ultimately depend on obvious level.
Right. No.
Now, scientists also, investigate on obvious level.
Things which are obvious to us. Huh?
And on that basis, then eventually, analyze more hidden phenomena. The most hidden phenomena then have to rely on third person. Now, in order to rely on that person, third person, we have to sort of investigate that third person, whether reliable or not. In order to investigate that third person, his sort of explanation or his knowledge about first level, second level, must be correct, 100% sure. Then we conclude that person is reliable. Then third sort of level, what he said through his or her own experience, then quite acceptable, quite reliable. So the long process like that. So all this, your knowledge, Nalanda Masters, Indian knowledge, we Tibetan not invented these things. All, they imported, imported from India. So you, Indian, everything exported, no, nothing left.
Okay.
Sometimes tell you, my Indian friends, the Ahimsa, very much exported. Mahatma Gandhiji and his follower, and Nelson Mandela followed that. And even sometimes, Yasser Arafat, also later part of his life, he also is following Ahimsa. So export. So while exporting these things, must produce continuously within the country. I think altruistic way. Everything give them and nothing left. Of course, still India, I think these potential traditional values still there. Now we should pay more attention about these values and educate our younger generation these values with combination, the scientific sort of findings and these ancient Indian knowledge. Combinedly educate our younger generation. That's very, very important. Next question. Now that old one.
Old is good.
Why bad? Yes.
Thank you, Johannes. The world of spirituality is so vast that it's virtually impossible to fathom it in one lifetime. And therefore, one notices that some people in one lifetime can cover more distance, much more distance than others. What do you think that is a function of?
From Buddhist viewpoint, according to Buddhist explanation, not just one life. So continuation of life. I think according to my not very sure, little experience, including my dreaming, some my previous life in this country, some masters, some scholars. So at least I think several sort of, several lives. So I learned, I study, and practice. So some traces or imprints of those life sort of experience, knowledge. I think one, some difficult subject. My case is without much effort, some point I easily sort of understand. Then some occasion we should discuss with some top scholars. Their sort of knowledge, their understand through a lot of effort. My understand without much effort. But understand, you should compare, I'm not behind. So then I felt, oh, maybe those subjects I familiarize through many lives. So that, from Buddhist viewpoint, of course, you see, according to theistic, this very life created by God, then God knows, we don't know. So that, it seems, you see, and then also is some my among my friend, some, it's a few words, they understand. Some, several times, explain, still confused. So, you see, there are really, you see, the some differences about imprints now in past life. So then, I always be telling people, a Buddhist practitioner, you see, don't expect becoming Buddha or become enlightenment within 3 years. It is communist propaganda. The reality, eons, eons, it may take eons, eons. So, 100 lives, or 100,000 lives, million lives, go like that. But once you, our mind, basis of thinking, because of that, set one sort of direction, then life after life will continue. Then some improvement. Buddha's own sort of story mentioned three countless eons. So that really gives us some kind of because of determination. If too much sort of expectation within 3 years become enlightenment, then after three years nothing happened, then completely lost your faith, your sort of enthusiasm. So that's the dangerous. Much better. Think. Eons, eons, eons. And then I think my friend knows one very important sort of prayer. So long space remain. So long sentient beings remain. I will remain in order to serve them. That really gives us purpose of our life. And because of the usefulness of our life, that also becomes source of satisfaction, source of inner strength, source of determination. Clear? Like that. Yes? Now perhaps. Yes, this one.
Your Holiness, I also have questions connected with the Atisha text.
Okay. Already 4:30. Oh, then last question, yes, Atisha.
Okay. My questions are connected with the Atisha text that we are doing. Stanza 55, which talks about conceptuality being the basis of samsara. Oh. I would be very grateful if you could explain that a little bit. It's a very, very dense stanza.
Yes, that it will come tomorrow. I will go through Kasuri briefly
now.
The text, then that will come. Okay. So now, let us Because let us rest. And for me, no dinner as a Buddhist monk. One tea, and if I feel hungry, then a few biscuits with the salutation to Buddha. Then sound sleep, usually 8 hours, 9 hours sleep. So let us take rest. And see you again tomorrow. Thank you.